Well, good morning, everybody. Going to kind of be switching gears here a little bit. Going to be talking about some phosphorus and potassium rate and placement work I've been working on at Upland Cotton. And I am Austin Brown from Virginia Tech. So just a little background about Virginia cotton production in general. You can see here on the map, this is all the cotton production in the United States. Most of the cotton production in Virginia is focused here in the southeast region, and that's primarily in seven counties, and it makes up about 35,000 hectares. That's what we had in 2014. But being as we are up northern in Virginia, upper in the cotton belt, it's northernmost cotton in the United States, and that poses some more unique climatic conditions and struggles of that nature. For one instance, we have low heat unit accumulation compared to other states, being only about 2,200 DD60s. So some justification for this research, phosphorus and potassium fertilization in Virginia, it's generally done, our growers generally broadcast apply it prior to planting, and the number one tillage system used is strip tillage. So, and we also, there's limited data available for us on banding of phosphorus and potassium, and new higher yielding and earlier maturing cotton varieties have increased demand from nutrients during the boll, bloom and boll set period, and it's been found that phosphorus must be available after 6 weeks after application to maximize yields, and that cotton actually needs over 3 kilograms of potassium per hectare, and that's their demand during the peak bloom period. So that's brought on some more potassium deficiencies and problems of that nature, kind of spurring on some of this research. So the objectives of this is, number one, to look at the phosphorus and potassium, putting it in a deep placement versus a 5-centimeter by 5-centimeter delivery method. And I'll kind of, in next slide, I'll kind of talk more about these two delivery methods. And then we'll also be comparing those two methods to some of the things that are currently being done by our growers. And we are going to compare those for crop establishment, early season growth, petiole nutrient concentrations during the bloom period, and lint yield. Those will be our response variables we're looking at. So some materials and methods. Here's our experimental design. We had 4-row plots that were 12 meters long, and we used 91-centimeter row spacing. That's pretty much the what everybody uses in our area. And we used all one variety of Phytogen 499 across all of our sites. So, and for the sites, this work was done in 2013 and in 2014 at Suffolk, Virginia, at the Tidewater AREC, is a Virginia Tech research station, and then at Lewiston, North Carolina, at the Peanut Belt Research Station, which is an NC State research station location. And these were done at these locations in 2013 and 2014. Not in the same field, but at the same locations. So, picture here to the right, let's see if I can get this mouse working. This is a ripper shank from our strip till rig. And what we've done is, if you look at the back of it, we put 3 stainless steel tubes that come down and can disperse fertilizer 15, 23, and 30 centimeters below the row while we're going through and strip tilling, preparing the land before planting. And then what we're comparing that to is the 5-centimeter by 5-centimeter banding, which is done at planting. It's on the planter. So, and what that is, it's putting liquid fertilizer 5 centimeters below the seed and 5 centimeters beside the seed at planting. And then one of the other things we're looking at is comparing that to, like I said, broadcast is pretty much the norm for our area. So comparing broadcast granular fertilization prior to planting. And what we did in this study, we actually hand spread those at our sites. So the treatments that we had, we have our unfertilized control. That received no phosphorus or potassium fertilizer. Then we have the broadcast agronomic control, and that was using our soil test recommendation based off of our Malik 1 soil test report, looking at, and that was 45 kilograms of P2O5 and 45 kilograms of K2O, and that was the standard, our 100% rate that we used. and we compare that to a liquid starter control. And we threw treatment number three in here because that's a common thing some of our growers are starting to experiment with. That's one thing that North Carolina Extension is starting to push with some of their growers, so we threw that in here as well. And that's looking at 10-34-0 at a rate of 112 kilograms per hectare of N, and then the potassium broadcasted. So 4, 5, and 6, those are our 5x5 bands treatments, and the treatment number 5 is the 100% rate. Treatment number 4 is half that, 50% rate, and then number 6 is the 150% rate. And then we also did that for the deep placement treatments. We did a 50, 100%, and 150% rate as well. So I hinted on this earlier, talking about 10460, but the granular fertilizers that we use was DAP, diammonium phosphate, and then potassium chloride. Now in 2013, we used 0060, and then 2014, we actually had to use 0062 just because of relatively what we could get our hands on during 2014. So, and we just balanced the rate accordingly. And then our two liquid sources are ammonium polyphosphate and then potassium thiosulfate. One important thing to remember here, though, is that all of our plots did receive 39 kilograms of N and 46 kilograms of sulfur per hectare pre-plant, and that was accomplished by balancing them with ammonium thiosulfate and then using a 30% UAN solution. But all the plots did receive that except for the unfertilized check, treatment number 1. So a little more materials and methods. The data we collected here, we did some early season development stuff looking at plant population, taking stand counts. Also, we took weekly plant heights from until the first week of bloom, and then we had total nodes that we took from first square to first bloom. And then also nodes above white flower was taken to give us another growth index, and that was taken from the time of first bloom to cutout. The main things I'm going to be talking about today, though, are the petiole sampling and lint yield. And the petiole sampling we took was from the first to the ninth weeks of bloom, and that was taken from the fourth vegetative leaf down the main stem. And we took 24 petioles per plot, and those were taken from the first and fourth rows as to not affect yield, because we harvest with a two-row plot picker. We picked the two center rows, and that's where our yield data came from. So a little bit about our statistical design and analysis. We had a randomized complete block design, and we had 4 replications of each treatment at each location each year. And the significance level we used for ANOVA was 0.1. And then we also did a Tukey-Kramer HSD mean separation at a 0.1 significance level as well. And the nutrient management systems that we analyzed, those were our single factors that we were looking at. And that, again, would be the unfertilized control, the broadcast treatment, and then the banded 10-34-0P with the broadcast K, and then the 5x5 band and deep placement, and both of those were at the 100% rate. And then also placement by rate was analyzed. It was a 2x3 factorial with our three rates, the 50, 100, and 150% phosphorus and potassium rates. And then also the two delivery methods of deep placement and 5x5 banding at planting. So getting into our results here, this was at the Virginia location, the Tidewater AREC, and this was the petiole potassium by the different nutrient management systems. One thing I'll draw your attention to here on the left is the 2013 data. And it was pretty tight between our different delivery systems. Not a whole lot of variation there. But we did start out pretty high, between 6.5% to 7% at the first week of bloom. So the x-axis here are the different weeks of bloom, and then on the y-axis is the petiole potassium. So in 2014 at the Tidewater AREC, we did see a little bit more of a spread, especially during the third week of bloom in that period, but it started out a whole lot lower, being around 5% during our first week of bloom. So we thought that was pretty interesting, you know, the different years looking at this. So also looking at potassium by nutrient management system here at Lewiston, the 2013, a little bit more scattered. We did have a little bit higher levels of potassium in some of the fertilized plots compared to the unfertilized control. And we did not see as much of that in 2014. It was a little bit of a tighter spread. But one thing I will bring to mind is we kind of got to take some of this Lewiston data with a grain of salt for 2013, because we did have a sand burn injury that happened on the left here. This is mid-June. We had a high wind storm that came through and sandblasted a lot of our cotton and really set it back. It had some necrosis. Some plants died, but I was pretty impressed myself. The cotton did come back, and here a few weeks later, you can see it did come back. It just delayed maturity, and that kind of influenced some of the things with the uptake. But back to the Tidewater AREC Virginia location. Here's where things got pretty cool and interesting for me anyways. Again, we have weeks of bloom on the x-axis and then petiole phosphorus on the y. And the unfertilized control consistently every time had significantly higher amounts of tested higher for phosphorus compared to all the treatments that actually did receive phosphorus. So one thing to keep in mind, these were much shorter plants. They were nitrogen stressed, nitrogen deficient, and just much smaller. And that kind of caused an elevated phosphorus level, kind of a false reading, so to speak, even though they received no phosphorus, but these were smaller plants and actually had higher levels when they were tested. And this was consistent across both years. Then on to phosphorus at the Lewiston location. Like I said, we had that sand burn injury. That kind of delayed our response in 2013. The data was a whole lot closer together, but then as the cotton became to rebound and some of the treatments did spread. 2014 with phosphorus, again, we didn't see as much of this phosphorus effect. We didn't have as much nitrogen deficiency. One thing about that is we did actually put side-dress nitrogen at the Lewiston location in both years to look at that, and that was not done at the Tidewater AREC location. So I'm thinking that's why you didn't see these elevated P levels in unfertilized control at either one of these years here at this site. So on to lint yield. We did see a significant increase. Even though they did have higher phosphorus levels, it was definitely higher yield, and I believe it was among all the different treatments that received phosphorus and potassium application over the unfertilized check. And then this is all at the Tidewater AREC. And then on the right, we didn't see the differences here. Like I said, we did have the sand burn, and it did receive side-dress nitrogen, so that kind of came into play here. And comparing just the 5x5 and the deep placement above all the 50%, 100%, and 150% levels for those treatments, looking at that, we did see a significant increase at the Tidewater AREC location, and that was about 161 kilograms per hectare of lint more than the deep placement. And we did see a numerical increase for the 5x5 over the deep placement at Lewiston, but it was not significant. So for a little summary, like I said, at the Tidewater AREC location, the nitrogen deficiency did elevate P levels. And just a little takeaway from that, I would say it was important to have your nitrogen status in check. You know, be sufficient for nitrogen when you're looking at making in-season management decisions, especially for phosphorus and even potassium. And then the 5x5 banding last year at Tidewater AREC did produce more lint than the deep placement. So that's important as well. And we're currently harvesting the 2014 location, so be interested to see how this data looks. And our environmental conditions impact petiole nutrient concentrations. I'd say from year to year, 2013 and 2012 were both really high cropping years for us. We had really good yields. So I think that's why 2014 we had lower levels starting out, especially of potassium. And then the 2013 sand burn, it did delay the peak phosphorus and potassium uptake and concentrations in the petioles and yield, and I think that's most likely related to the delayed root development. So I'd like to give just a few acknowledgments real quick. The Fluid Fertilizer Foundation for funding this research along with Waters Agriculture Labs, to Sandro Kelly, Keith Edmondson for helping secure the North Carolina land, Tommy Corbett, David Horton, and Gail White. Thank you.